a Fueled by Coffee production.
My name is Ben Burrell and welcome back to Bob Dylan Album by Album, a podcast that brings you an in-depth look at each Bob Dylan studio recording record by record. So I hope you're good, despite the obvious. Welcome to another little kind of end of season run. We did this last time out with Bob's religious Christian period, and I thought it'd be nice to do it again. So I thought it'd be nice to spend three or four episodes looking at Dylan's standards era. That's the best way I can describe it. That's kind of the only way I can describe it, I think. It's an interesting period for Bob's work. Not the most fruitful, I don't think, but like all the eras we've seen, even if it sometimes doesn't contain the best songs or the best ideas, there's still kind of important stuff happening there that has a wider effect on the rest of his career. We'll get to the first album in this era in just a second. First, though, I want to say thank you to everyone that has bought me a coffee over the last week or so. Hi, Timothy Feather. Hi, Renee. Hi to Chris in New York, and thanks for your message as well, mate. Hi to Gerard Williams and Joe Duncan and Michael Roth. Hi to Leon. Hi to Joachim and Sweet Pretty Thing. Thank you so much. As always, the Buy Me a Coffee link is in the episode's description. If you fancy Buy Me a Coffee, the podcast is essentially fueled by it. Then click the link right now. It's like $3 at a time. Thank you for that. Let's not waste any more time, shall we? Let's have a look at 2015's Shadows in the Night.
There was a moon out in space, but a cloud drifted over its face.
With this LP and this era, Dylan surprised us. We shouldn't have been surprised, though. This is something he'd been wanting to do for a long, long time. And that's the joy of Dylan. In reality, you never quite know what you're going to get next. From religious albums to IBM adverts. And let's not forget, at one point, Dylan wanted to do a slapstick comedy show for HBO, which I'm still furious that we didn't get. The reason why this is a different kind of covers album is because, unlike an LP like World Gone Wrong, say, this is not just a collection of songs being covered. In fact, Dylan doesn't really see them as covers at all. He says, "These songs have been covered enough, buried, as a matter of fact. What me and my band are basically doing is uncovering them, lifting them out of the grave and bringing them to the light of day." While that quote might suggest they do something completely new with these songs, like a reggae version of Stay With Me, for example, or did someone say a metalcore makeover of What'll I Do? No, that's not the case. While Bob doesn't actually change these songs beyond all recognition, he does, as he says, uncover them. These standards that were made famous by Frank Sinatra are modernised. Not in that they're transported to a modern sounding genre, they stay in their lanes, but Dylan shrinks the whole full orchestra from the Frank Sinatra cuts to just his band. Lavish string arrangements are replaced by pedal steel guitar, brass sections are substituted for a small brass band, and any traces of syrupy production are airbrushed out in favour of a more mournful tone. This is not ring-a-ding-ding Sinatra, this is Dylan doing Sinatra, the saloon singer. Interestingly, Bob doesn't actually see this as a Sinatra covers album, even though, as we'll see in a future episode, he was heavily influenced by the ultimate crooner. That's not his only motivation here, though. He says, "Yeah, I knew Sinatra had sung these songs, but a lot of other people recorded them as well. It just so happens that he had the best versions of them. When I recorded these songs, I had to believe that I'd never heard of Frank and that he didn't exist. He's a guide. He'll point the way and lead you to the entrance. But from there, you're on your own." Dylan mentions Frank being a guide there, and it appears that was a literal situation in the studio. Al Schmidt, the album's engineer, takes us through Dylan's studio routine. He says, "Bob would listen to the songs over and over and get Sinatra's intention on what he was trying to do with the song. Then he would only do one or two or maybe three takes on each tune, but he would make it his own. It had nothing to do with Sinatra. He was just there to learn the song and find out whatever it was about. It was just an interesting way to work and a lot of fun." The first taste us fans had of this new idea was Full Moon Empty Arms, a song from 1949 written by Buddy Kay and Ted Mossman. It was based on a classical piece from Sergei Rachmaninoff called Piano Concerto No. 2. Sinatra had a decent-sized hit with it in 1946, although it was actually one of his lesser successful tunes from that year. He had a lot of big hitters in those 12 months, unsurprisingly. Bob sticks pretty closely to Frank's cuts. As I've mentioned, and we'll see this a lot, the string section of the song is replaced here by Donnie Herron's steel guitar. It's so important to this record. In fact, an instrument hasn't dominated a Dylan record like this since Scarlett Riviera's violin from Desire. While the strings on the Sinatra recordings give us a melodramatic sorrow, here the steel guitar brings dejection to them. It gives the album an evening feeling. It's almost painting a picture of an old gas lamp lit street cloaked in fog in the midnight hour. It's pretty perfect for these songs. It creates the perfect atmosphere. At times, it's almost spooky, which is added to by some wonderful, if unusual, chord shifts in this song. After the rudimentary move from the E chord to the A chord in the line before the titular lyric, chaos then reigns. We go from A to E minor 7, ending up at B minor 9, and then we go to E7 9, which is where that slightly odd sound is introduced in the chord shifts. It's just enough to spice things up and keep things interesting without spoiling the song. This then leads us to a nice little musical break. While this song was a first teaser of the album, it also operates as its mission statement. The LP, like this song, has a great late night feel, as I've mentioned. Dylan has always been good at records like this. From Blonde on Blonde to Modern Times, he has a knack of writing songs that shine in the dark when the hour is getting late. They cry out to be listened to with a glass of whiskey on the side and street noise coming in through an open window. You can almost picture Dylan delivering these performances with his bow tie undone on an empty stage after the audience have gone home. This album isn't the show, it's the after party. With you. And that's why I really like this record. It's a covers album, but a covers album with a purpose. The title reflects this late night feeling too. Shadows in the Night presents us with a feeling of a narrator grappling with fear and regret and loneliness. Shadows could be anything from a physical shadow or former lovers he's crooning about, ones that cast a shadow across his life. The cover art also presents this image too. The front cover is of a thoughtful Dylan in formal attire behind a vertical bar design that emulates the cover of jazz artist Freddie Hubbard's 1962 album, Hubtones. The back cover shows Dylan and a masked woman, once again in formal attire, sitting at a small nightclub table looking at a Sun Records single. People have connected this shot to the 1966 black and white ball attended by Frank Sinatra and his wife Mia Farrow. All this puts us straight into the album's setting. It's a classy, mature affair, it's nostalgic, with more than a nod to the past, but it's not a pastiche. The sound and the art and the tone of the record results in one of the best branded Dylan albums, if we can call it that. This is a concise piece of art. It's not just a run of songs. This at times verges on a concept, a late night crooner's album delivered by Dylan. The next single from the record was track 3, Stay With Me, not to be confused with the Lorraine Ellison song, which ironically was to be recorded by Sinatra, but he cancelled the session, leaving a 46-piece orchestra with nothing to do. So label Warner Brothers Records asked Ellison if she'd be the vocalist, and the rest is history. The Stay With Me that Dylan records comes from the Frank album Sinatra 65, The Singer Today, and is perhaps one of the best representations of the difference between Frank and Bob's takes. As I mentioned earlier, Dylan shrinks his songs, but here it's a monumentous shift. Listen to the opposing intros. Here's Frank's, a lush layered affair complete with a bell tolling at the start. And here's Dylan's more subtle cut. I do like the sonics of this song, but for me, the melody is just something I can't connect with. I find it a little aimless. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of the Frank version because it is the same melody, but he gives it that my way velocity that sees it through. With Dylan, though, his more downplayed approach doesn't serve the melody for me. It has a plodding feeling, almost like Dylan is singing to himself whilst he's doing the dishes.
Stay with me like the lamb that in springtime wanders.
us far. From the fold comes the darkness and the frost. I get lost.
Personally speaking, there's a vast improvement on the album's next track, Autumn Leaves. We're greeted with yet more pedal steel guitar, and while it always sounds great on this record, it particularly shines here as its centre stage. It's just so eerie and inviting. Under it, we have some ad-libbed acoustic strumming and then some picking, creating a wonderful soundscape that almost welcomes Dylan's vocals. In the right ear, we have some scene-setting sound effects as the electric guitar does its best to sound like wind howling. It's like when orchestras used to imitate the wind in old Hollywood films. Whilst on paper that doesn't sound the best, here it really works.
The falling leaves drift by the window. The autumn leaves of red and
This, of course, goes hand in hand with the song's theme of autumn, as we hear Dylan singing about leaves blowing past the window. Later, and with a double bass introduced, we hear sonics that aren't a million miles away from Dylan's 2020 composition, My Own Version of You. This is, again, spooky Dylan.
But I miss you most of all, my darling. When autumn leaves start to fall,
the lyrics in this song are incredible. I love their feel and the way Dylan delivers them. They concern love and loss. Bob told AARP magazine, "You sing that and you have to know something about love and loss and feel it as much, or there's just no point in doing it. It's too deep a song. A schoolboy could never do it convincingly." The song's origins are slightly more complex than your average tune. It was composed by Joseph Cosma with original lyrics from Jacques Prévert. They were obviously in French, given that name, and we have English lyrics from Johnny Mercer. It started out life as a song titled The Dead Leaves for a 1946 film. It then became Autumn Leaves after the English translation. In 2012, it was called the most important non-American standard, and it's been recorded over 1,400 times by mainstream and modern jazz musicians alone. It's also the eighth most recorded jazz tune ever. It even inspired the name of a 1956 film starring Joan Crawford. While it has been covered a ridiculous amount of times, from the ones I've heard, Dylan's cut is up with the best, and for me this becomes a record highlight. There's another great song up next on the track listing, Why Try to Change Me Now. This is one of Dylan's best performances on the LP. I just love his voice in this. And while it's not perfect, I believe him. And that's the battle most of the time. This was one of Frank's favourite songs. He tells us as much on a live recording. And we can also assume that it means a lot to Dylan too, especially at this point of his life. Like the quote I've just mentioned, it sounds like he connects with it. Perhaps that's why I like the performance so much. This is all topped with a wonderful solo on, yes, pedal steel guitar. If you listen carefully, you can also hear Dylan sniffing in the background at one point.
Why try to change me now? Don't you remember I was always your clown? But why try to change me? Why try to change me now?
This appears on Frank's 1959 album No One Cares. It was the last song he recorded for Columbia, the record company that Dylan would call home for almost the entirety of his career. It was the first song of note by the then 23-year-old composer Kai Coleman. Coleman remembers that on the day of recording, Sinatra slightly altered the melody. He says, "I listened to the record and it sounded so natural, the way Frank did it. I thought to myself, he's right, he's completely right about this. So I just left it that way and I changed the music around him. That's the first and only time I've ever done that." While I don't want this to turn into a Dylan versus Frank bout, I think that Dylan does win this round. Whilst the Sinatra version is obviously great, with Dylan I just feel it's a bit more personal. And for me, the song's meaning shifts as the sonics change slightly. As you'd expect, the Sinatra cut is fuller. It's a more lavish affair with soaring strings. This gives the lyrics about being too old and stuck in your ways a melancholic inevitability. It's a jaded feeling. This is summed up in the lines, "My strange little world, just go passing me by." Whereas Dylan's more intimate setting makes it a little sadder, like he's frustrated with himself for pushing everyone away. It's just more lonely than Sinatra's version. This is, I assume, not intentional, but it's an interesting example of how sonics can change the words even if the lyrics remain the same. There's another intimate version of this song that is worth your time too, from the future Dylan collaborator Fiona Apple. She gives us a piano-led, slightly more jazz-leaning version. The instrumental breaks in the song put us in lounge territory, but in a good way.
Why can't I be more conventional? People talk and they stare, so I try. But that can't be, because I can't see my strange little world just go past and leave by.
There's another track on the album that has been covered and recovered many, many times like that one, and it's the opener, "I'm a Fool to Want You." Sinatra actually co-wrote this one. He first cut it on March the 27th, 1951, and since then Tony Bennett has tackled it in 1960, Sammy Davis Jr. cut it in 1961, and even Frank's son records a version in the 90s. Dylan's cut is pretty good. His voice isn't really made for the titular line, it's not bad, but I feel Dylan's rasp goes a little bit against the grain of the elongated fall in the lyric.
I'm a fool to want you. To want a love that can't be true, a love that's there for others too. I'm a fool to hold you.
Unsurprisingly, there is another well-trodden song on the LP at track number 6. It's been covered by Bing, Sinatra, obviously, Williams, Garfunkel, Nelson Como, The Temptations, and Bert. That's Bert from The Muppet Show, by the way. He covered it in what I can assure you is a memorable scene-stealing performance. Andrew Lloyd Webber called the song the greatest tune ever written for a musical, and here Dylan does it more than justice. Once again, it's a brilliant vocal. The track in question is, of course, "Some Enchanted Evening."
And night after night, as strange as it seems, the sound of her laughter will sing in your dreams.
With this being a late night album, the songs never really get above second gear in the bombastic stakes. But this cut is particularly chilled, and these ones suit Dylan's voice the best. It's a similar feeling on the aforementioned Full Moon Empty Arms, the album's next track, which leads me to another big plus for this record. Whilst the Sinatra versions of these songs are good, they do lack a bit of quality at times in terms of their recording. Dylan obviously records these songs in a state-of-the-art studio, meaning we get these records in the best quality they have ever been in. Sure, they're not carbon copies of Frank's songs remastered and updated, but it's nice to have these classic songs sounding as lush as they do. The songwriting shines through regardless of the recording's quality, but it's nice to have these words and these notes crystal clear.
Full moon and empty arms,
The moon is there for us to share, but where are you?
A night like this, could weave a memory.
Elsewhere, Dylan tackles the classic What'll I Do, a song that has an embarrassingly rich history. It was a number one hit for Paul Whiteman and his orchestra in 1924. Sinatra and Nat King Cole both released versions in 1948, with Sinatra's peaking at number 23 and Cole's landing at number 22. Sinatra also recorded it again in 1962 for an album called All Alone. Irving Berlin is the song's writer, and it's another love song of loss and yearning. But it might be inspired by something more. After a mega hit in 1911, Berlin made enough money to buy his mother a house. She would die living in it 11 years later. Berlin was obviously distraught, and it's been claimed the song's tone comes from this episode. This would become another big song for him, and according to his biographer Lawrence Berggren, What'll I Do sold more than 1 million copies in sheet music alone. While it appears to come out of tragedy, this song does have a happy ending. Berlin was married to his second wife, Ellen McKay, from 1926 until her death in 1988. Their daughter Linda told PBS's think tank, the song was the very thing that kindled her parents' romance. She says, "My parents met at a dinner party given by a mutual friend, and my mother charmed my father because the first thing she said to him was, 'Oh, Mr. Berlin, I do so like your song, what shall I do?' And the song, of course, was 'What'll I Do?' So my father made some remark about his grammar not being nearly as good as hers. They took an instant liking to each other, and they started to see each other off the back of that." Like we've seen a lot on this LP, you feel Dylan understands the themes in this song. That's why he's decided to cover it. We've heard him singing about stuff like this for his entire career. This song is in the same boat as a song like One Too Many Mornings. His performance is heartfelt and wistful and wise. This song is Bob in his best environment.
When I'm alone with only dreams of you that won't come true, what'll I do?
The sonics for this are pretty much the same as almost every other track. There's a dominant, you guessed it, pedal steel guitar. We also are treated to a reverb-heavy electric guitar and some softly strummed acoustic and a double bass like, again, almost every other track on the LP. There's the slightest of changes, though, on the album's closing track, That Lucky Old Son, which sees a brass section reappear in force. Unusually for this LP, there's more of a hint of a flag waver in this song than a midnight ballad. And we also get a big final note, usually a staple of the genre, but noticeably absent on this record.
Give me nothing to do but roll around heaven all day.
The brass section here does its best to add some pizzazz to proceedings, but for me, at times, it borders on a Salvation Army recital. However, you can see why Bob puts this song last. It shares themes with some of the great Dylan closers from the last couple of eras of his career. Songs like Highlands or Murder Most Foul, for example. There's a feeling of redemption and desire for escape to a new world as Dylan sings, "Good Lord above, can't you know I'm pining, tears all in my eyes. Send down the cloud with a silver lining, lift me to paradise, show me that river." Which instantly puts me in the same world as Highlands. The words here come from Haven Gillespie, a classic Tin Pan Alley composer. The music comes from Beasley Smith, and Dylan, as you'd expect of his record, keeps it pretty simple with regards to the sonics. His performance once again is decent, particularly on those lines I've just mentioned. This tune is a nice variant on the album's constant musical theme. The theme is so constant, in fact, that the sound of the LP barely changes as you move through it. Thankfully, though, it's such a strong sound with a clear identity, you don't get particularly sick of it. Moreover, the source material is so good and so rich, they can't help but shine. You'd have to really mess up to ruin these songs. And obviously, with someone as good as Dylan, who loves these songs as much as he does, this LP is always going to be a win. While one album in this medium with this style works perfectly, Dylan stretched it out for a full era with differing results. But how did this era even come about? That's something we look at next time.
Full moon and empty arms.
Thank you for listening to this episode. As always, share your thoughts on it. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Bob Dylan Podcast. Next time, we're having a little kind of, I guess it's like a mini episode almost, having a look at just how this era and almost why this era came about. Bob has got a kind of long-standing history with Sinatra. They were linked. It's almost like it was written in the stars that their careers would be intertwined. So we do that next time. And of course, we'll cover the other albums in this era as well. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, goodbye.
A Fueled by Coffee production.